Little roller up along first. Behind the bag. It gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight, and the Mets win it.
A 2-1 pitch. And a drive in the air to deep right field. That ball headed toward the wall. That ball is out of here. Out of here. A game-winning grand slam home run off the bat of Robin Ventura.
Hey. And it's hit deep to left center. Andrew Jones on the run. This one has a chance. Home run! Mike Piazza, and the Mets lead 3-2.
High fly ball to left. Back at the wall, and the captain's going deep, 2-1.
Turner drives one to center, chasing Nimmo back to the warning track, right at the fence. He made the catch! Oh, wow! The catch of the year for Brandon Nimmo! He took a home run away from Justin Turner!
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? The show starts in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
Episode 28, the Say Hello Podcast. My name is Casey Lynn. I am joined by my co-host, former Major League pitcher Bill Pulsifer, as we are entering episode 28. Of course, this podcast and in this episode is brought to you by roots-recordings.com. We want to thank Stephen White, our producer behind the scenes. And first of all, and most importantly, Bill, how are you today, sir?
I'm well, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. And I just want to point out to everybody watching on YouTube, please like, share, and subscribe. We are Say Hello Media on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button. We are approaching, I'd say, 400 subscribers. Not too shabby for 27 episodes in. And if you're listening wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's CastBox, Google, Spotify, Apple, hit that follow, like, leave us review. We appreciate it, Bill, Steve, and myself. Bill, we are at the halfway mark now of spring training and opening day, which is March 28th at Citi Field for the Mets against the Brewers. We'll talk about what's going on in this episode so far in spring training. But before we do, once again, I would just want to give my thanks to our last episode if people did miss it. It is in our archives on YouTube at Say Hello Media and also wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give my gratitude to superstar first baseman of the Mets, Pete Alonso. That was awesome. That really was.
Yeah, he was great. And I'm still a little perturbed that I had the technical difficulties, which kind of made it a little more difficult for myself because I wanted to hear every word he had to say because he was definitely enthralling and had me sitting on the edge of my seat listening to everything he had to say.
Yeah, it was, well, shit happens, you know, technical difficulties happen to the best of us.
Yep.
And again, I just wanted to thank Pete for coming on, and it was a good episode, of course, and he gave a lot of insight. You don't really get that from superstars current. We did have Doc Gooden on. Superstar in his own right, but you know, Pete is literally right in his prime.
As I tell you, the thing that really, really stuck out to me was just how he was a guy. You know, he was one of the guys. It was just the guys hanging out, talking, and no pretense, no. I'm a superstar, and treat me as such. Nothing like that. Just really, really cool. Obviously, we're big Mets fans. I followed the Mets for a really long time. Still follow the team currently. So to be able to see, like, the guy and see the way that he can just sit down with two average Joes and just shoot the shit with them, man, that was really fun.
Yeah, it was a conversational 1 hour and 10 minute episode, but it felt like it was just, you know, three guys at a bar having a couple beers and just shooting the shit, like you
just
said.
So shit, hanging out, man. It was great.
I enjoyed it, so thanks again to Mr. Alonso. And we will definitely be having some more guests on this show as time goes on. But unlike other podcasts, we don't just take anybody. You know, we strive for the best. And I think the proof is in the pudding with Doc Gooden and Pete Alonso. We've done two guests. We have a guy who's getting his number retired on April 14th at Citi Field. And we have a guy who's on pace to hit 500 home runs. So we'll leave it at that.
Not too shabby.
So, spring training 2024, we made it through the, you know, winter, and now we're at the halfway point of spring training, like I had mentioned. We got to talk about a couple things that have popped up in Mets land. And I'm going to start with one that is a little bit concerning, and you might have some insight into this, unfortunately, because it is an elbow injury. Jeff McNeil. Now, he has a tear in his non-throwing arm. It's his left arm. And he can throw, he can play defense, and he has been, but they have shut him down for, as of right now, it's been about a week. I did read that he is cleared to start hitting again over the weekend. It's not a full-blown tear. It's not like Tommy John surgery, knock on wood, is needed right now. He felt healthy all spring training. Up until a week ago, he won golf tournaments during the offseason with the same swing batting. You know, well, you know, he was a righty in his golf swing. But it's always concerning when you have a tear in your UCL. He is a position player, and they gave him the PRP shot. Yep. And he says that he feels much better. But Bill, someone who has unfortunately gone through this in their elbow, regardless if they say he feels better, it has to be concerning already.
Well, I mean, obviously, as athletes, I was in the same boat where you say, I feel better, whether you do or you don't. Some of it's placebo effect and some of it's just hopeful. We hope, you know, you obviously hope for the best. The thing that's concerning for me is the fact that Jeff hits left-handed. And if it's his left arm, that swing, when he's rotating through in his swing, that is where that left arm does open up, you know, and that's where the stress does happen. So I'm not going to say that... He couldn't play with it, but it would be one of those things where maybe it's a hindrance and you don't get the Jeff McNeil that we know that he can be. I mean, obviously, we still hope for the best. We hope that the PRP shot takes and he does have some healing. But usually those things take a little bit of downtime, not just, you know, hey, take a week off in spring training and get back to it. So it is a little bit concerning. I would say if he was a right-handed hitter, maybe not as concerning because you don't have that. It's called valgus stress, where the elbow joint actually opens up a little bit and there's a ligament that comes across. And when you're a left-handed hitter and you swing, your left hand is your back arm, that elbow does, again, it does open up a little bit. So it's some of those things that where it might be barking at him consistently throughout the year where something he might end up having to get it fixed eventually.
Yeah, and you know, you gave a lot of good insight there for listeners who might not know exactly what's going on. What my concern is that they diagnosed him with this at the end of last season. It was, you know, middle 2023, September, you know, 2 weeks left. They shut him down. They never did anything, you know, no surgery, of course. And they said that he'll play through it. Now, of course, spring training and he's ramping way back up. Yeah. And like you said, it's barking. One, I don't understand this. And we've gone through this with so many players. They never – and they could be hiding it. It would be tough to. No MRI. Why in the hell not? You know, yeah. Obviously they did it in September and they saw what they saw. But now that it's barking up again and he's complaining, you have MRI machines at your will in Major League Baseball. Go get it, you know. And we mentioned this early on, the X factors, and we'll get into that because we have a mailbag question about one of them. He's a big X factor for the 2024 Mets.
Absolutely.
Will he win the batting title? No. But can he hit 300? Yeah. But with an injury like this that could be barking or he will be out for an extended period of time, that's a problem. So we all know injuries pile up, you know, on every team. But after Senga, who is your quote-unquote ace in the right and the shoulder problem, and now you have your Jeff McNeil won the batting title 2 years ago and is right in the middle of the lineup. You know, those 85 wins that we talked about when you have these injuries that you can't have, it's starting to get a little scary early, and that's not what you want. That's my take on it.
Yeah, it's surprising to me that they didn't go ahead and do a PRP shot the day after the season ended. You know, why not? You got – look, they don't take. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. You can use – Tanaka is a good example where he had the PRP shot. What was that, his first or second year into the league?
Yes.
And he was able to throw his split finger and pitch the rest of his major league career without without injury. So that's a little bit surprising. Obviously, Jeff is a huge part of the team, and not just on the field, but I would think in the clubhouse as well. I think he's one of the leaders in the clubhouse. So a healthy Jeff McNeil would be very important for the ball club.
He is, and there's no way around it. So hopefully when he ramps back up over the weekend, he's pain-free, and he can get there, you know, to opening day and have no more setbacks. So we, as a Met fans and anyone listening or watching, obviously we all know that Jeff McNeil, like you said, is a huge part of both on and off the field for the New York Mets.
100%.
As for something that's gone well for New York, with Senga being hurt, and we don't know how long he'll be out for. They shut him down for 3 weeks, you know, and then they'll see how he feels and all that. So we won't speculate until we have more news. Tyler McGill has looked very good in spring training. Now, let me say this. I don't put a lot of stock into numbers in spring training, but I do put it more on an emphasis on players, pitchers, whoever, who are trying to earn and get a spot. Absolutely. And that's exactly what Tyler McGill is trying to do, because there's now another spot available because of Senga. So Tyler McGill, and we did talk about a little, he pitched the end of the season in 2023 well. In September, his numbers, they were very good. He learned a new pitch this year, and you were a little skeptical about it. They call it the spork. He learned it from, you know, a little bit from Senga. It's basically a splitter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's always scary for a pitcher who has had arm problems. He had a shoulder injury in 2022, and he really hasn't been the same since. But we see what McGill can offer when healthy. So if we want to just play positive and optimistic, maybe he just wasn't healthy last year after the shoulder surgery. He's learned a new out pitch. And I'll leave you with this question about your take on it. Is he – so far in his two starts, limited sample size, he looks healthy. He's striking people out. He has that out pitch, and he's still hitting 98, 99. A healthy McGill, not saying he's Senga, but sure can help any ball club out, and the Mets could use all the pitching they need.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, obviously, he's shown what he's capable of doing in over long spans of time. He's also struggled, but that's a great point you make when it comes to coming off of surgery. You know, when they say that you're healthy, sure, you could be structurally sound and healthy, but getting back into the rhythm, and I will say this about him. Last year, I noticed little slight differences in his arm action from, you know, week to week, month to month, start to start, things of that nature. So maybe getting back into having your arm feel good, as well as getting the timing and the rhythm back, is something that us pitchers, is when we go through injury, that we have to go through a little bit, where you're structurally sound, but your body and your arm doesn't quite move exactly how you remember it prior to the surgery. As you stretch things back out, you maybe tear some scar tissue, which is all part of coming back from injury. And he's obviously shown that he could be a successful major league pitcher. And it's a great point that maybe he wasn't 100% healthy last year. And he's a year off of surgery now, still young and still hungry. And like you were talking about the numbers in spring training, it's important for guys that are vying for positions to see that they are putting up the good numbers and having success, because you don't have that where you can rely on, well, you know what, I was out there working on my changeup today.
Right.
I was out there working on my pickoff move or whatever it may be. So that's definitely positive signs.
Yeah, he's still young. He actually has put a lot of time in because of injuries in the past couple of years to a Max Scherzer. I mean, he started opening day for the Mets in 2022 because nobody was available. DeGrom or Scherzer, 5 shutout innings. I mean, we see what's there. So, you know, a healthy Tyler McGill, 6'8", 6'9". He's got the frame. He's got the velocity. Maybe that splitter will help. But like we both agree upon that, if he's healthy, maybe we get the good Tyler McGill that we've seen flashes of.
Yep.
So moving on to the last X factor that we've talked about, if things are going to go well for the Mets, Starling Marte, who I believe is the biggest X factor for the Mets. We both have talked about in the past on episodes, you know, the 2022 Marte, his first year, the glue of the lineup. When he got hit in the hand in September, the Mets weren't the same and they lost their lead or you know, whatever you want to call it, to the Braves, and their offense was just not the same. Healthy, played in the Dominican Winter League, spring training, small sample size, but he threw a cat in from right field. He laid out a bunt single down the third base line and beat for a base hit. Speed's still there. You know, a lot of fans were worried about his groin and all the injuries he's coming off of. Again, small sample size, but he looks healthy. Now, I understand he's older. He's a little more fragile. Anything can happen. But for right now, a healthy Marte, and he looks healthy, and that's the biggest thing. He easily could not look healthy. He didn't look healthy last year, and look what happened. He missed, I believe he only played in 86 games. He looks good so far. And if the Mets can get that, what do we agree on? 80% of a 2022 Marte this year? Okay. He looks right now like that. And he's got something to prove. He's got a roster spot. Right field is waiting for him. He'll DH a couple times. But he's got to show the Mets that, hey, you know, I'm ready. I'm healthy. Last year was an aberration. I was not healthy. He looks good, Bill. And that's very important right now.
Yeah, another situation where a year off of surgery now, so
yeah,
that much more healthy. Obviously, a year older, but I don't see him as an old guy. You know, I see him as still a very hungry ball player who goes out there to try to prove himself on a daily basis. And I kind of look at him as like the straw that stirs the drink a little bit. You know, you got all the cocktails and all the mix of your cocktail. You need something to stir that cocktail up to make it the perfect. And I think that that's the kind of guy that he is. You know, I think that he can keep everybody in check a little bit while he can also set an example as to how we're going to go about playing our game. Cause I love the way that he plays the game. He has the flair, but yeah, he's a hard nosed ball player. You know, he'll run through a wall for you. If there's going to be a fight, he's going to be the first guy there ready to fight. And I think another guy that is a big time leader in the clubhouse. So if he's around on a daily basis, I think what he brings to the team, not just on the field, but off the field as well, another example. So we've talked about it at length before. We both are big Starling Marte fans and are definitely rooting for him to be the guy that he was. I'll take 85%. 80% might be just a little shy, but I'm an optimist with him. I think a healthy Starling Marte, I believe that he can be the same player he was in 2022.
That is the hope. And one thing I did like, and it actually brings up a question that I have for you, as a former player and being in a big league clubhouse, he started for the first time this year doing interviews in English. Now, we know he knows English, but he's always had the translator with him, and he's done it in Spanish, his native language. We've seen Alvarez, 22 years old, Diaz, very, you know, Alvarez, quick, 1 year it took him. He was determined, and I love that about the kid. Diaz took him a couple of years, but he's speaking in English now. Marte, 35, older, but this year he decided, you know what? I'm going to talk in English in the clubhouse at my locker. As a former player and as someone who's been in the clubhouse, as a teammate, do you put any stock into that? Maybe it shows that maybe he's caring a little bit more, or he's trying to show people that, all right, I mean business, because now I'm going to speak fluently or the best that he can in another language.
I'll tell you this, from experience for myself playing in winter ball and knowing I'm very conversational in Spanish. I'll have people tell me that I'm fluent in Spanish, but I'm very aware that I'm not fluent. But I am very conversational in Spanish, and I've done interviews in Spanish. And the thing that you don't want to do is because as athletes, we're very prideful. We take pride. You don't want to sound foolish. And you don't want to say the wrong thing, because what I've found a lot of times, obviously, if you're a Spanish speaker in America, a lot of times Americans have a tendency to try to pick on your words and make fun of if you mess something up. So I think a lot of it has to do with comfortability. And maybe that's just Starling Marte saying, I feel more comfortable and I don't care anymore. If I make a mistake in my English, you understand what I'm saying. You get my gist. And I am coming to be part of this culture in America. And that's not a political statement or anything, but I just think that's a comfortability thing for him. I think for Alvarez, I think it's an awesome thing, because he could probably see potential money down the road for being able to speak the language. Diaz, same thing. He's more comfortable, you know? Yeah. So I do think it's a big thing. Do I look at it? I look at it with respect as a teammate to say, you know what? He's going that extra mile, because as somebody that does speak two languages, when you see somebody that doesn't speak two languages, think down upon somebody that does speak two languages, it blows my mind, because you can't speak two languages. So I think it's awesome. I think it's great that he's saying, you know what? Screw it. I don't care. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to let the chips fall as they may. And I tip my cap to him for that.
Yeah, I have nothing but respect for players, whatever language it might be, Japanese, Spanish, whatever. Respect to learn a new language, because it's not easy.
No.
And everyone has their time. It takes time, you know. It took X amount of time for Diaz, X amount of time for Alvarez. You know, we could go on and on. I look at it as a good thing. So we'll keep it at that. Lastly, about spring training, I wanted to ask you this because this is the time. As a pitcher who had, you know, a spot ready for him when you knew it, when those opportunities happened, when did you stop looking at, like you were mentioning, I'm going to work on my changeup today in a start. When did you start ramping it up where, okay, it's 21 days to go until my first start that counts at you know, in the regular season? When did Bill Pulsifer start ramping it up?
Yeah, it would definitely be
now
within the next couple starts. You know, the next start, yeah. I would say, you know, you get out there twice, you get your feet wet a little bit. And then it's got to be, you know, the one inning, then the three innings, then, okay, now we're going four or five. Now I need to get to the five or six. And then by my last start in spring training, I'm hopefully getting to my 100 pitch level, which I'm not sure that's the case as much now as it was in years past, especially when I came up, because I threw up to 35 innings in a spring training, 34 and 35 innings. I threw as many as that in spring training. I think that the number they shoot for now is like 25. So that's like 10 less innings. Because
it makes a difference.
Yeah, that's a huge difference. You know, yeah. That's two spring training outings, basically. So I think it's go time now. This is the time of the spring training now where the pitchers and catchers have been there a little bit longer than the players. And it's starting to get a little tedious on them. And they're starting to itch and get ready to go. So I think now is definitely the ramp, completely ramp up phase of spring training. And you want to have now got through your dead arm period, which everybody goes through where, man, my arm feels like shit. I throw it as hard as I can and it comes out like it's got nothing on it. And everybody goes through it. So you're hopefully through that stage. And now it's, okay, let's start ramping towards opening day and being ready to throw those 100 pitches when the bell rings.
Yeah, 100 pitches now in 2024 in spring training is not happening because you don't even see it in Major League Baseball during the regular season now these days. Like if a pitcher hits 100 pitches, you're like, whoa, you know. So it's sad, pathetic, but you know, times have changed.
To be honest and to be fair, much more pitches are thrown at the top level of your meter. You know, if you're throwing it 100% as many times, and you don't have that inning where you're facing a pitcher anymore. It obviously the wear and tear on a daily basis is more than it was in years prior, especially because everybody's swinging to hit the ball over the fence nowadays too, as opposed to, you know, batting the ball around a little bit.
Perfect segue. We got a couple players, namely two pitchers that are upper echelon, Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery, respectively, the reigning Cy Young Award winner in the National League, and Jordan Montgomery, who pitched well for the Rangers in the postseason last year. They're not signed still, and they're board contracts, clients, and they're still not under contract. We are in the middle of March, and we have seen over the last couple of weeks two Boris clients sign, and not for the money they expected. Cody Bellinger got 3 years, but an opt out after each year. Yes. And it was like a total of $80 million. Yep. Okay, baseball money, we know it's stupid. Okay, but he was looking for $290 million. Chapman signed for 3 years, $54 million with the Giants, their third baseman now, after he turned down over $100 million with his former team, the Blue Jays. Opt out after every single year. It's the new Boras special. It's I fucked up. I overvalued my players. Nobody wants them. Now we're going to get less money and have an opt out, so maybe they can have a great year again, even though Snell had a Cy Young season and still not signed. So my question to you is there any, let's say hypothetically, this podcast is over in 20 minutes and then breaking news, both of them sign with, you know, whoever, Giants, Snell, Montgomery goes back to the Rangers. I don't know. Would they even be, they couldn't even be ready for opening day right now. It's 2 weeks away. Like, I don't know how long the process goes with guys like this, especially pitchers, where we're talking about two really good ones. This is unprecedented. They couldn't be ready for opening day if they signed right now.
Well, I'm going to say this. As somebody that, and not at the major league level, but let's say going to Mexico or going to Taiwan, like some of the things that I did, where you went from maybe being at the house and looking for a job, and these guys still take their jobs very, very seriously. And I know that they're working out on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they're throwing and they're doing their bullpens and they're doing it on a regimented situation to where on this day I'll treat this as my start. On this day I'll treat this as my bullpen day. And I guarantee you they've been doing that. Will they be sharp game ready for opening day? Probably not. Will they be able to go out and pitch and be quote unquote successful or competitive? Let's use the word competitive.
Right.
100% they'll be able to do that. Will the organizations want to do that if they the amount of money that these guys are going to eventually sign and risk injury? I don't think so. So technically, will they be ready? I think technically, yes, they can go pitch. Technically, will they be ready and be used that way? Probably not. They probably are now behind the where, you know, they're going to have to be in extended spring training for a couple of weeks prior to getting started. I do think that these guys are professionals. One's a Cy Young Award winner. Another one's a World Series champ. They're doing their due diligence as much as they possibly can. And I'm sure that they're finding college kids, whatever, you know, minor league guys that are free agents, and they're having at-bats and they're doing everything they possibly can to be ready. I just don't think that the organizations are going to say, all right, we're not going to at least give you a couple of weeks down in spring, extended spring training to be ready. But I think that they could walk back out there and be ready to play. If they now look, you said in 20 minutes they signed, right?
Yeah, right. That, so, it could be another 2 weeks. We don't
right,
know.
Right, exactly. That's another story a couple weeks from now.
Right.
I'm sure that those guys are busting their ass and making sure that they're as ready as they possibly can be to be able to perform when it's time to go.
It's just crazy. But it has been ever since free agency opened up, and here we are. But it is what it is. They'll sign just like yep. Bellinger,
you signed a guy that never pitched in the big leagues to the biggest contract. Yeah. He screwed everything up. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. No, he hit Yamamoto.
With Bellinger in that.
Otani had a lot to do with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Bellinger, you weren't any good for a couple of years. You had a good year. You had to prove yourself again. I think we've talked about that. Chapman, small market team from the A's to go into Toronto. Look, obviously a bigger market, but not, you know, not New York, not LA, not, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing too, is that, going back to Bellinger, MVP had awful seasons after that.
Regained it. 200 for a couple.
Right.
Of years. I mean, come on.
Found it for 1 year, happened to be his walk year. Teams are not obviously, you know, confident that was the real Bellinger last year. It's obvious.
Yeah, and like we talked before, another guy that went through a really bad shoulder injury, given a high five in a World Series, crazy, and separated his shoulder. That's a huge injury, especially for your lead arm. You know, it's a big deal. So he has to prove himself again. So it's actually, listen, he's going to be all right. He's making a heavy chunk of change this year.
$30 million.
And he has a chance to go out and put up those same numbers this year and possibly then get that big long-term
right.
deal. You know, people want to see that he's healthy and that he's the guy that he was. He is the MVP or up close to the MVP that he was prior to being injured and struggling for a couple of years.
Yeah, and if he puts back, you know, $30 million for 1 year, okay, I'll take it. Back-to-back years of doing that, he'll opt out, and then –
And I would love for the Mets to go hard after him then if he can prove it again.
Yeah.
I'd love to have him in the outfield. A healthy, focused, hungry Cody Bellinger. I think he could be a tremendous ball player.
Yeah. And I think that's what teams were waiting on. Let's not give him 200 to 300 million. I want to see it back to back years, because you had one good year after three bad years. 100%. Yeah. You know, so moving on real quick, let's talk about two former Mets pitchers that have made the news in the last week or so before we get to the mailbag.
Okay.
Justin Verlander pitched for the Mets for a minute last year, and he started the year on the IL with that post, whatever that, you know, shoulder, the back of the shoulder injury that kept him out 5 weeks.
Yep.
The Mets are off the books because of a vesting clause in his contract for this year with the Astros, who they traded to him, traded back to last deadline. If he pitches 140 innings, it kicks in and he gets his full share, which is 35, 40 million, whatever. And the Mets are still on the books for $17.5 million. However, he is not starting the year healthy. He is now on the IL. He had not that he was hurt with anything. He just he had that arm fatigue. Back. You know, yeah, like he didn't feel right. You know, kind of like a Kodai Senga. But so they're going to ramp him back up, and he's just not going to be ready for opening day. So where I'm going and getting at right now, I believe if he doesn't hit that 140 innings, and by the way, even after missing 5 weeks last year, he did pitch 160 innings.
That's exactly what I was going to say. He threw 166 innings last year. I looked it up. I was like, holy cow, I can't believe he pitched that many innings.
It's because he was healthy, obviously, throughout the rest of the year, which is a testament to a 41-year-old pitcher. But, you know, he's one more setback away from that 140-inning mark not happening. And listen, I like Justin Verlander. I never root for a guy to get hurt ever. I'll put it this way. I wouldn't be bothered if he hit 139 and a half innings because we all know 2024 is what it is for the Mets, and it's about 2025. They'll only have $125 million on the books. That is a third of what they have now. Wow. And you have a pending free agent in Pete Alonso. Juan Soto's available, Max Fried. And the next guy we'll talk about is Zach Wheeler, who just signed, so he's off the books. Yeah. But Walker Buehler, Corbin Burns, they're all available. So that's $17.5 million for Steve Cohen. Call what you want, but that's a lot of money for a payroll. I mean, that's a decent player. So I wish Justin all the best. But let's get to 139.5. You know,
hang out for a little bit.
Exactly. Postseason doesn't count, you know, for this vesting. So, right. You know, maybe shut him down and invest him for the postseason. So,
well, you know, that could be something where he gets going this year and the Astros are a good ball club again. And maybe they say, you know what, we're going to go on eight days of rest for you this uh-huh. time around and see what, obviously being 41 years old and still being a major league pitcher and throwing at the velocities that he still does. We've really only seen one other guy really do that. And that was a long time ago in Nolan Ryan. So you got to tip your cap to Justin Verlander for everything he's been able to accomplish. I think there was another thing that had to do with those numbers that it would actually could make the player option for the following year be another thing too, and the Mets would still be on the books for and on the hook for paying part of that as well.
Last year was his first year of a 3-year contract. Last year.
2 years and then a third year as a player option.
Yeah, exactly.
And if he gets to that 140, he might just, you know, why wouldn't he take that player option?
Oh, of course. $43 million. Of course he would, yeah.
Right.
So there's a lot of riding on it.
And it's a weird position. On his shoulder right now.
I mean, I think you're in the same boat as me. It's like we all like Justin. He's good for the game. He's a good guy. He's Hall of Famer, first ballot. But, you know, being
help
a little.
Us out a little bit.
Yeah, just hang out, you know.
Right.
Take it easy. And lastly, so Zach Wheeler, he was going to be a free agent again next year. Phillies locked him up for the highest extension ever. 3 years, got Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander money. 3 years, $126 million. What is that, $42 million a year, something like that?
Wow.
You know, listen. We could go back to Brody Van Wagenen and the Wilpons and all the comments they said that he wasn't worth it. Well, he signed that 5-year contract with the Phillies. He has been a runner-up in the Cy Young Award every year. He made $118 million over those 5 years. He just got rewarded 3 years, $126. Guy is a top-5 pitcher in the league. The Mets screwed that up big time. And I like Zach Wheeler, but man, you know, imagine a rotation right now with a Zach Wheeler who has accomplished what he's had, homegrown, you know, they drafted him and then they, the Giants drafted him and then they traded him for Carlos Beltran. They had Beltran and then traded him to the Giants for Zach Wheeler. So not homegrown, but he was in the minors with the Mets for a decade.
He came up as a Met. He was a trade, but he came up as a Met. Listen, he's an animal. He's a beast. It's really a shame that it what went down when he had Tommy John, and then he had so many issues coming back that the Mets kind of just said, you know what, he's done. They did screw it up. And I think there was something about, at one point in time, it was something about the stitches. They had stitched through his ulnar nerve or something when they stitched him back together. Just, but there's nothing like a guy like him who is a little bit ticked off. And he was ticked off, and he was still able to throw. It's one thing if you're ticked off, but you get come back and you're throwing 85 miles an hour.
Right.
But for him to be pissed off a little bit and wanting to prove some people wrong, he has done that and some, and he's another guy, man, it would be great to have him, but he's obviously found a home in Philly.
He never wants to leave.
Which,
yeah.
You know, the Mets fans hate to hear that, obviously, because it's a huge rivalry, and the Philly fans are in the Mets fans. It's a thing. We all know that. So, but, he's tremendous. I love watching him pitch. I just wish that he was doing it in blue and orange. That's for sure.
You know, it's crazy when you had DeGrom, Harvey, Max, Wheeler. It's Wheeler, with all the injuries and all the time that he missed, that actually has made, I believe, the most money. Even DeGrom, over DeGrom, because, you know, it's close. Do the math. $126 million. He made $118 million. It's right there with DeGrom. And right, it's crazy how he reinvented himself after what you thought was damaged goods. So good for Zach, you know.
Absolutely.
Even though he's a Philly. we'll leave it at that. Time for the mailbag. And last week, we had the honor and privilege of having questions from our listeners and watchers for Pete Alonso. We are back to our normal version of Let's Ask Bill. I think there's a couple questions, if not maybe one, for me. And if you're new to the show and you are listening or watching for the first time, we ask on Shay_hello. We put it out a couple days before we record. If you have any questions for Bill or myself about the Mets or Major League Baseball, throw it on there as a tweet or an X or whatever they call it now, and we will read it. We'll pick the good ones. I can't read them all. Live on the air, and that's exactly what we're going to do today. So, Bill, are you ready?
I am prepared. Ish.
All righty. Ish. Always ish. Let's start with your boy, like always. NYMGI, he writes, with the Lucas Giolito news, he was wondering, and let's read it again. With the Giolito news, was wondering, does every team do their own physical, or do they look at the most recent one done by another team? Good question.
I would think that as a free agent, you would think they would have to do a physical prior to signing the contract. So
yes,
I would definitely think that that has happened, and that's they got to do their due diligence. The thing that I find interesting about Giolito is within the last couple of years, because I always thought he had the worst arm action I have ever seen of a major league pitcher.
You kind of called it.
the worst I've ever seen. The shortest, craziest, I don't even know how you come up with it. And it came out at 97 miles an hour. Let's rewind like 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
And I was like, man, how in the world is this guy throwing like this? And then it turned into, within 2 years, he was throwing 92, 93 miles an hour. And I remember seeing a video last spring of him, and he was trying to reinvent his arm action a little bit, where he was actually swinging his arm a little more traditionally. And then I think he kind of went away from it again. Now he goes to Boston. Boston's pitching staff has been turned over to driveline baseball. So yep. Now he's going to go here and he's going to go there and he's going to try to learn all these new freaking things from driveline baseball. These guys that didn't even play are going to teach guys that do play how to play. And now he blows his elbow out. Yep. Surprise, surprise.
Sarcasm detected. Yep. Yes. Unbelievable. I would agree with you. It's a great question, but I think it's mandatory you sign with a new team like Giolito did. He was a free agent. He got 2 years, $40 million. We both said way overpaid because we saw a lot of red flags. And yeah, I would think it's mandatory. You got to pass your physical, you know, once you sign with a new team. So I think to answer JK NYMGI's question, it's with your new team. They're not going to go off the Indians or the Angels White Sox most recent physical. They're
going to look into just last year with the Correa, right? He had to get his physicals. When he had his physicals, they found something wrong.
Right.
Then teams backed off. So it has to. Especially the type of money you're looking. I know if you get injured, it's insurance. But listen, they have to pay their insurance premiums as well. So you don't want your insurance premiums to go through the roof because you're just signing people willy nilly and then they end up injured.
Right. But for $40 million, you're going to go with, you have to.
You got to dot your T's and cross your I's a little bit.
Exactly. So it's a good question, but I think that's your answer. I mean, think about it, just human beings and guys, everyday folks, you know, if they have to show proof of health to whoever, they can't go from a physical from 5 years ago, you know, look, I'm healthy. No, that was 5 years ago. Things have changed. So, thank you for the question. Let's move on to Dylan with an N, 9589. He writes, great pod last week with Pete. Thank you very much, Dylan. And he has a question for you, Bill. Bill, how would you approach pitching to Pete Alonso if you were in your prime? Thanks.
I would go about him, let's say, relative to how I would have faced somebody like Mark McGwire or Sammy Sosa. I wish I could say I would be throwing two seamers and changeups away from him, but that really wasn't my forte. So I would think that it would be keeping him honest away, but throwing hard cutting fastballs, preferably down and into him. And then
even though he likes the ball low, as we know. So
I'm talking about hopefully getting it in enough to where when he does hit it, he pulls it foul.
Oh, okay.
You know, if I'm missing, I'm trying to miss in the inside corner in. Because I know that he likes to get out there and likes to pull the ball a little bit. I would hope that he pulls those balls foul, and then maybe I can get a curve ball down into the dirt or a high fastball to throw up and hopefully get a swing and a miss. But I wouldn't pitch him, you know, trying to baby him away and all that, because that really wasn't my strength. I would be strength versus strength.
Yep.
And either you beat me or you don't. And I'm hoping that the ones that I do throw inside, you pull into the stands, and I can get ahead and buy some strikes without, and make you hopefully build some confidence that, oh man, I hit that ball hard. I just missed it. Uh-huh. And then maybe bounce that curveball in the dirt or, you know, ride the fastball up high.
It's the name of the game. And you want to get ahead of them so you have the advantage and then you could toy around. So yeah.
I mean, keep him honest away, you know, show him something away. But I think that I would really try to pound him in off the plate, hoping that he's looking to be aggressive and I can buy some strikes with foul balls.
Well, I don't think we'll ever see the, unless it's a fantasy camp in 20 years. I don't know if we'll see that matchup.
Sad story, real quick, before we get on to the next question.
Yeah.
I'm helping a travel ball team out here on the island, and they were doing live batting practice with the pitch track machine and all that, the you know, the $35,000 machine.
Yep, nice. And I was everywhere.
I was like, you know what? I got a wild hair up my ass. I'm going to get up on the mound, and I'm going to throw one just to see.
Oh, boy. You sure you want to?
71. Now, listen, I wasn't 100% loose, so I do think I can get to mid-70s, but 71 made me want to cry a little bit. So I don't think I'm getting in on – I don't think I'm getting inside on Pete, the 71-mile-an-hour fastball.
Pete's taking you 455 feet.
No, he actually might swing and miss three times on one pitch because it hasn't got there yet. So.
It's like Rookie of the Bugs Year. Buddy. Where he throws, you know, the Henry Rowengartner loses that 100-mile-an-hour fastball and throws it underhand, and you know, he swings and misses by a mile and a half. Yeah, but you know what, 71's not that bad for not, you know,
50 and a broke arm,
and not terrible. You know, being active throwing and having a regimen, you could, like you said, maybe you get, if you know you wanted to, hit 80. And Bartolo Colon, who's right around 50, he's still pitching, not competitively, but you know, trying to get outs wherever he is, having fun. He's throwing 80. So I'm sure you could if you really wanted to. That's
if I got into throwing and that. The only thing is, man, it hurts. It just hurts.
Doesn't everything? Once you know, and once you get to past a certain age, everything just seems to fucking hurt.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Thanks for the question, Dylan. And a very good question, actually. Let's get to Jeff Cohen, who has his own podcast, Baseball and Barbecue. I highly recommend it. He has a question for both you and me. So let's go with you first. And Jeff Cohen, 41, asks, Bill, how did you like your time with the Long Island Ducks? Any interactions with Buddy Harrelson, RIP?
Well, first we'll go with Buddy. Obviously, a lot of interaction with Buddy. Buddy used to come down to spring training at the end of spring training when he knew that there was going to be guys that were going to be possibly released and looking for jobs. So that was the first time I ever got a chance to meet Buddy. And that was kind of like, okay, so this guy must have talked with people at the front office to who are you guys looking to release.
You but, knew.
Buddy was a gentleman. Buddy was a funny guy. Buddy was a Met. Buddy was a Duck. Buddy was the face of the Ducks, you know. He was a great guy, awesome guy. Did a lot for ball players to keep them in uniform and keep that dream alive. And I was lucky, one of those lucky, fortunate guys to play for the Ducks and, as well, make it back to the major leagues. So I will forever be indebted to him for giving me that opportunity. Playing for the Ducks, a lot of fun. Much more toned down, obviously, because it's not involved with an organization. A lot of fun. They were very, very, very well supported at the time. I'm not sure how it is. I haven't been to the ballpark in years now, but the worst thing there is obviously the money. You know, the league started in 98. I played there in the mid 2000s.
First championship you were part of.
Yeah, 04, first, and I started the final game. So I forgot to bring their first championship.
You brought the band back, as you said.
Well, you got the band back, exactly.
I remember it all.
Obviously, the fact that they're paying guys in 1998 the same thing that they're paying guys now in 2024, where $3,000 is the most you can make there, that's the toughest part of it. You can't make any money there.
No.
But they're selling the dream. So
yep.
I wish that they would pay guys a little bit more money. The Atlantic League decided, you know what, we're going to pay the guys a little bit more. But I can't say anything negative other than that. You know, the money's a little bad, but you're still being a professional baseball player. You're still getting to pitch in front of 5,000-6,000 people in a 5,000-6,000 person stadium. A lot of fun. Got to win a championship. Got to know some people that I wouldn't have ever met, and still in contact with some of those people. So all good. All good.
Good question. You're right. They sell you on the dream. You know, a lot of former big leaguers like yourself go there not for the money. They go there to be on a showcase for teams to see that, you know, look at Daniel Murphy last year. Same exact thing. You think Murph needs the money? Hell no.
Right.
So I think it's probably
dipped down a little bit with the big league guys now because of the money being so much different than it was even, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But
it used to be.
The Atlantic League is a good league. It's good baseball.
Yeah. Let's go to the last question from Jeff Cohen to myself. I'll keep it short. He goes, Casey, what item among your memorabilia is special to you and why? That's a good question. Looking at it right now, I'm going to go with, I have a lot of items that are near and dear to my heart, but, my favorite player ever, is Mike Piazza. And so what I'm looking at right now is I have a home plate, of all the top catchers in Major League Baseball autographed on a real home plate. Looking at it right now, you got Gary Carter, Carlton Fisk, Johnny Bench, Ivan Rodriguez, Mike Piazza, and Yogi Berra.
All Hall of Famers as well.
Yeah, all of them. All on a home plate. Pretty good condition. Piazza's kind of fading a little bit. But I would say, to answer Jeff's question, that is my favorite because you just don't see it. It's rare. I like rare items. You know, you don't see a lot of home plates that are signed by catchers of that nature. So I would go with that one.
That's pretty cool.
Thank you. And thanks to Jeff for the question. Time for one more question. This is from Theo A, who writes it's a two-parter. Let's go with the first question. He writes, just a fun little activity and a question. Number one, is Tyler McGill an X factor this year? We both can chime in on it. We talked about it obviously earlier in the podcast. Yes, Tyler McGill, if healthy, if that splitter works, huge X factor, especially with the injury to Senga. Would you agree with that?
100%.
Yeah. So we touched upon it. Number two, Get out of here, Theo. He writes, can we get an immaculate grid on the pod? No. No, sorry. I mean, Theo, I love your enthusiasm and creativity, but they have an immaculate grid that they got sold for millions upon millions of dollars that, you know, a software engineer put together. We'll leave it at that. You can go to immaculategrid.com, free advertising forum, and play all you want. Bill and I will do our thing on the podcast, unless you got some other ideas.
I don't. To be honest with you, I've never done the Immaculate Grid.
I have had
people send it to me when they've used me, you know, friends or whatever. They'll send it to me and say that, and originally was like, oh, they don't even have a picture of you. And I was so embarrassed that everybody else had a photo.
But they should.
Well, they do now, I believe. They do now, I believe. But I think this was early on. But it's not my thing. I've never been into the Wordle or Immaculate Grid, or even if you want to go back, the guys that used to do the crossword puzzles and all that.
Right.
The clubhouse. I was too busy making fun of them. Wrongly, I will say, as a grown up now, wrongly, immaturely, because I do another podcast with some lefties that I know that they were the guys that were doing it.
Yep.
I still call them nerds every once in a while just to mess with them. But they were smart guys. I was the dummy.
They were on to something back then.
Yes, they were.
All right. So, Theo, I don't mean to be all sarcastic and condescending at all. It's just we're not doing an Immaculate Grid on the podcast. It's a podcast. But it is a fun game. I've done it. It started off hot. I haven't played it in a while. But
it is an interesting concept. It is definitely interesting.
It is.
For sure.
And you know what? Maybe in the next week or two, I'll go back. You can always go back to every day they have one. I'll try to find one with you, because all Immaculate Grid – you know, if they do it player wise, they do, and with team. So all you got to do is find, build a team, like let's say Mets, and then you got the Brewers. Bill Pulsifer, right? Bam. You know,
there you go.
And your picture would come up. And depending on how many people picked Bill Pulsifer, you get a percentage. And the lower the percentage, more rare, rarity score equals good, low rarity score. So
right. It's
a fun game, but Shea Low Podcast is the Shea Low Podcast.
Right on.
I want to thank everybody who chimed in on the questions. Again, on YouTube, Shalo Media, like, share, subscribe, hit that button for subscribe. Leave any comment you want. We always get back to you. And also, wherever you get your podcast, we're on every single platform. Leave us a review, a like. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your pets. Most importantly, tell your pets. And let's get into our last segment of the podcast. It is Quick Pitches. Again, if you're not familiar with the show, first time you're watching or listening, this is for Bill. It's three questions, maybe four if I don't like his answer for number three. And last week we did it with Pete. Well, we kind of did it with Pete Alonso, but we kind of gave him softballs with baseball questions. We don't do that with Bill. These are non-baseball questions. He does not know what's coming, and it's a rapid fire. Bill, I know you're ready. So
I'm ready.
You always are. Let's get into it. It's been a couple weeks.
I'm ready.
First question, what is your favorite decade of all time and why? And let's go with living in it. And if
Man,
you don't like-
I tell you, it's a really, really tough between the 80s and the 90s. Very, very tough. The 80s, because of being a kid, and the 80s were just awesome. The music was awesome. I know you look back, everybody's like, you're crazy. But no, you see that it comes back around again. There's so many great music, so many great movies. And I was growing up. So obviously the 80s is right up there. But then the 90s, I mean, I became a Major League Baseball player. The hip hop in the 90s was the golden era of hip hop. Grunge music. So it's tough. Can I say, how's this for a decade?
I know where you're going.
85 to 95. How's that sound?
That's exactly what I thought you were going to say. You're going to break it down in a 10-year span.
85 to 95.
I love it. Yes. Yeah, that works for me because I agree with you. Music was at an all-time high for hip hop, you know, and rap, especially the late 90s. And then you have the grunge music alternative that came out in the 90s, early 90s with like Nirvana and, you know, Green Day and all those type of Smashing Pumpkins.
Hey, listen, mid-80s music was good, man. I could still throw that on and listen to Men Without Hats or Men at Work. You know,
and movies were great in both decades, you know.
Yep.
So I like that. 85, you get half the latter half of 85 and then that first half of 90 uh, of
The 80s,
the 90s, latter in the first half. So I like that answer. Let's go with number two. What is the most outdated piece of technology you own and actually use? I was thinking about this for me too. It's a little tough, but I thought of one.
Well, I mean, listen, I got an Apple, my iPhone's in a 10 and I do my podcast on it. So that's a little outdated. Look, it's the 15 now and I should be on a PC or on something.
Technically, is it outdated? Yes. But I was thinking more of like a VHS or, you know, a DVR player, you know, something along those lines.
You know, it's crazy. So I was thinking about breaking out the DVD booklet and the DVD player and going and watching some of my old DVDs. Because I believe it or not, I had Wu-Tang Clan, which obviously was a big Kung Fu influence. They actually had a line of old Kung Fu movies that they would sponsor. And I bought all of these freaking DVDs. And I wanted to sit down and watch old Kung Fu flicks. So I would say the DVD player, but I didn't get quite break it out to use it.
Okay. Yeah, no, DVDs were huge. And, you know, that it has impacted the movie business for, you know. But,
not a thing anymore.
No, it's not. And I loved it when it was.
Yep.
Let's go with number three. Depending on your answer, maybe four.
All right.
If you could add any word to the dictionary, what would it be and what would it mean?
Scrumtrelescent.
I'm intrigued. All right. What does that mean?
Scrumtrelescent was a word made up by Will Ferrell when he was talking to, he was playing inside the actor's studio. And I don't, James Lipton is the host of.
Yes.
Okay. He was interviewing King Lort.
Okay.
This guy used to be the center square on Celebrity
Jeopardy.
What is it? Tic Tac Toe. What was that game? The game show called. Anyway, Scrumtrelescent.
Okay.
He made the word up because he couldn't find a word to describe how delightful and how enjoyable the story that James Lipton had just told him. So Scrumtrelescent. It means delightful and enjoyable.
That actually sounds like something Will Ferrell would say. Yeah, I could hear it in his voice.
Somebody else's material.
Oh, that's. You know, hey, that's fine because
it's good.
It's not in the dictionary.
Right.
So that works for me. I love the answer. And maybe I'll try to find a way to use it into my vocabulary. I don't know.
I'll find the skit and I'll have to shoot it to you over in text.
I'm going to have to figure out how to spell it because, you know,
Scrumtrelescent.
Scrum.
Scrum. Scrumtru. Less. INT. I don't know.
Yeah.
Scrumtrelescent.
Yeah, sounds. We'll go with that. All right. Okay. Scrumtrelescent. I like it. It means delightful, kind of like that. I like the answer, which means we are closed with the quick pitches. No number four. That was a good answer because I'm a Will Ferrell fan, and that's a cool word. So, with that being said, that's going to wrap up episode number 28. As we talked about off the air, Bobby Jones, right-handed Bobby Jones. He wore number 28
Alrighty.
For the New York Mets. And he was a good underrated pitcher for them as well, that one hitter in the 2000 World NLDS against the Giants.
We used to say he threw the magic ball because he would throw at 86, 87 miles an hour, four-seater, just in the upper part of the zone, and guys would pop it up to the catcher. He threw magic
balls. It's not how hard you throw it. It's where you locate it.
That's right.
He was a perfect example. Kind of
very calm, like, cool, collected guy, Bobby Jones.
Yeah. And he had a killer goatee as well, just like you.
That's right. That was all the rage there in the 90s, wasn't it?
Yeah, a lot of goatees. So I had a lot of fun. It was good to be back, Bill and I. I want to thank Stephen White, our producer behind the scenes. Any last words and thoughts to our watchers and our listeners as we close out episode 28?
No, just like always, you know, I appreciate everybody that watches, that listens. Casey, I appreciate the questions every week. You do a great job of coming up with topics for us. And let's fucking go Mets.
LFGM. I know somebody who would be proud of that one. Well, for Stephen White, Bill Pulsifer, I am Casey Lynn saying so long from the Shea Low Podcast. We'll see you next week for episode 29.